I have used a lot of commerce platforms in the past. By far, the most robust is Shopify. No matter how complex your business needs and no matter how large your business grows, Shopify can handle it. And they do handle it for brands like Rothy's, Ruggable, Allbirds, Knox, Magnolia, Brooklinen, Glossier, and Cotton, to name a few. You may already use another e-commerce platform and you may be super unhappy with it, but you've already put a lot of work into it and migrating to Shopify could seem impossible. But I'm here to tell you that it is quite easy. When I migrated to Shopify back in 2022, their apps and tools meant I just had to make a few clicks and everything was ported over as if by magic. Shopify also lets you design your storefront however you like, which from personal experience I know isn't the case for many other commerce platforms out there. All these features and all this control can result in more sales more often. So stop leaving sales on the table. Switch your business to Shopify today and discover why millions trust Shopify as their all-in-one commerce platform to build, grow, and run their businesses. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/practical, all lowercase. That's 1 month for just $1 at shopify.com/practical. shopify.com/practical. Good morning, Prakaptan. Hard to believe that as of yesterday, there are officially over 100,000 of you out there listening every Monday and Friday, speckled all over the world, I might add, in over 170 countries. So I wanted to take just a moment ahead of today's episode to say thank you to all of you, and also to say thank you to this week's newest patrons. Thank you to Ryan Eldon, Isaac Murray Stark, Aaron, and Reese's, which reminds me of my favorite candy, Reese's Pieces. Ooh, actually, it's a close second to Almond Joy or Mounds Bars. That's probably going to start quite a debate in the Discord, but gosh, I love those candies. What are your favorite candies? This has nothing to do with stoicism. Let's move on. Thanks to each of you for becoming patrons of this podcast. Your $5 a month adds up, and your support makes it possible for me to continue to do this podcast and everything else I do full time. If you'd like to become a patron because you're not one already, you'll get rid of ads, support a creator you care about, and gain access to a few other perks by going to stoicismpod.com/members and signing up. Today we have a topic that had me salivating the moment it was suggested, and it comes from listener and longtime patron Griff. Griff writes the following: is there any use for personality types / labels within Stoicism? For example, the Enneagram scale, used for assigning numbers to people based off their personality traits. Personally, I find myself being frustrated when it comes up, as it feels like the use of a social tool like this would only serve to put somebody in a box, either giving the person that adheres to the number or traits internally excuses to stay the way that they are without changing even when some traits are less than ideal, or giving someone a definition of someone that they have a relationship with without fully getting to know them. I don't see much of a benefit to a social structure like this when one of the Stoic themes is looking at something, or someone in this case, for what it or they truly are. But within my social circles, I am alone in my opinion, as it seems like people see it as a tool for easier connections. This is an incredible episode suggestion, and I am biased for thinking so, no doubt, as you will find out. I am an 8W9, what I think they call an 8-wing 9 on the Enneagram scale. I'm an ENFP on the Myers-Briggs system, if that's what it's called. And I'm other things and other labels, a Stoic being one of them. So I'm going to start by stating my bias. I don't trust or care for these systems of categorizing personalities and, of course, people. I think they are banal. I think that their popularized versions are a sort of emotional pornography for people looking to find reasons that they are a certain way. And I think those people are usually self-indulgent children who are desperate to belong to some kind of in-group. And that might sound harsh, and it doesn't apply to everyone, but I think it applies frequently. And yes, in-group I think that the ENFP or the 8-wing 9 or the ISTJ or the 7-wing 6s, all of these things, all get into these strange little cult-like mindsets where they base everything they do on some internet influencer's interpretation of clinical studies. And that distinction is going to be very important. So if you're mad right now, pump the brakes. You probably won't be by the end of this episode. These things are supposed to be clinical tools. But returning to my bias, I think that the popularization of these clinical tools are childish. I think they're dangerous. I think they're unproductive. And I think that they are largely unnecessary, mostly because I do think there's some kind of practical use for them. I'm a philosopher, not a psychoanalyst or psychologist. And for that reason alone, I'm not going to attempt to validate or debunk the science behind these systems. People with more expensive degrees than any that I hold, which, by the way, as a reminder, are none, spent hundreds of hours coming up with these systems, and I'm sure there's data that supports each one of them to varying degrees. But I'm equally sure that the personality quiz one pays for on the internet is not run by those people, is also highly interpretive, and is, again, aimed at servicing self-indulgent individuals who are seeking an identity in online quizzes more than they're doing anything worthwhile. But again, I do think there is some practical use. Things that the Enneagram book says about me are true in many cases. Things that the Myers-Briggs assessment say about me are true in many cases. These things are so true, so frequently, that when they're utterly and completely wrong, I tend to overlook it. And what does that remind you of? Your horoscope, maybe? The Chinese New Year calendar they give you as a placemat at the Chinese restaurants in the early 90s? The ones that told you if you were a rabbit or a boar or a whatever else is on that placemat? While these modern forms of identifying your type aren't as wooey in nature as the stars, rising moons, or planets, or personified magical animals, they strike a similar chord, and I have an extreme distaste for them. But, oof, I keep mentioning that they have some practical use. So maybe I should stop bashing them and start explaining where that rational use or practical use lies in my estimation. We are still trying to figure out the human brain, but I think we've gotten good enough at understanding it now that we can make some normative assumptions with enough data. And that's what these personality systems are, I think. They are broad strokes informed by a broad data set that identify normative features of people within various similar-looking data subsets. That means, with some decent frequency, these systems are going to get a decent amount right about any single person within each data subset. I'm attracted to novel experiences, for example. But is that because I'm an ENFP or because I have ADHD? I'm also charismatic and a good communicator, or so people tell me. ENFPs tend to be those things. But is that because I'm an ENFP or is it because of something else? This is one of my beefs with these systems. It's not you're ENFP, so you're this. It's you're this, and we've decided to include this under the label of ENFP. Too many people approach these tests as a way of finding out truths about themselves, but that's not the direction they really work in, because how could they? But the practicality, here it is. They are tools of reflection, and this makes them, if you use them the right way, helpful to your Stoic practice, potentially. If you have never spent any time thinking about why you do what you do, or what other things you're likely to do based on the things you already do, then it is probably true that you've never researched things which might help you to identify resources that might help a person like you. I find these personality types helpful in identifying treatment and therapy options that are more likely to work for personality X than Y. Or to be more clear, I think they are intended as a tool for clinicians or therapists, which help them, those clinicians or therapists, to identify what approaches work best for them to use in providing an individual with therapy and support. I don't know this is the case, but I imagine these personality tests are just the commodification of serious lab-based science that was intended originally as a means for narrowing down what therapeutic approaches, language, and strategies would work best for those data subsets I mentioned earlier. So if you use them, Griff, or anyone else, I think they're great tools to think about what they're saying means for you. They aren't defining you. They're helping you to identify things about yourself within the context of how you might better manage yourself. But please, please keep in mind that the popularization and commoditization of these lab-based tools encourages a very childish, me-centric, my identity is special, hashtag ENFP, hashtag 8-wing-9, self-absorbed, self-indulgent, cult-like adoption label as identity of these tools. The shudder down my spine I get when I read a social media bio that says stoic, ENFP, Enneagram 8, dog lover, father, is enough to make me drop my tea. I'm in England now. I have to drink tea. It's the law. Your identity is not caught up in the things you like. Could you imagine if someone said, I'm a drinker, when you asked them to explain themselves? Or I'm an atheist? Or I'm a Christian? That's how absurd it is to respond with your Myers-Briggs type. You aren't the label. You wear the label doesn't wear you. When people ask what you're like, you say, oh gosh, that's complex. I think I'm someone who likes podcasts, drinks on the weekends because they don't like their job as much as they wish they did, and who gets a lot of joy out of going to church and volunteering at the local animal shelter. Beyond that, geez, it's a really big question. And we all tend to not answer this question very well. There's a movie called Anger Management, and it's a comedy. You've probably seen it. It stars Adam Sandler, and there's a scene where he is asked to explain himself, and instead of explaining himself, he explains what he does. And I think that these personality type tests encourage us to see ourselves as our actions instead of as ourselves. And I get that people use their personality types as shorthand to help people understand a lot about them in as few syllables as possible. But guess what? Nobody knows what the hell it means if you're an XYZ or an ABC. They might understand the stereotypes in the same way that my British neighbors understand that when I say I'm American, that I probably call chips fries and crisps chips. But since when were any of us, in reality, the stereotype of the thing we are? Do you really want to label yourself with shorthand that makes people think you're a stereotype of a thing they barely understand in the first place? Don't do that. That's weird and it's not helpful. Use personality types the way they were probably intended, as tools to help you figure out how to work best with yourself. I think that's a stoic approach to it anyway. Don't wear your personality like a name tag. That's just fan club, self-indulgent, in-group, out-group, looking to belong nonsense. At least that's my opinion. Thanks for listening today. I look forward to all the hate mail I know I'm going to get from this episode. My email address is tanner@nosages.com. Please try to keep it clean or my spam filter will catch it and I'll never see it. And then I'll never know how much you hate me for this episode. Until next time, this is Mufasa Daddy saying, take care, Simba.